Empire.
You thought you knew, but you have no idea. It's the urban sports scene.
You are listening to the urban sports scene, and we are part of Ampire Media. That's AmpireMedia.com. I'm Wole, and I'm joined by my co-host, Will T. What's good, Will T?
Nothing much, man. Just another day. Enjoying life.
I know, right?
How about yourself?
It's good, man. It was like I was talking off air with you. Like, I finally saw the Flash, and I was like, you know what? I'm going to keep it a buck. I was disappointed. It could have been better.
Yeah, very disappointed. Extremely disappointed. But I told you that, man.
Yes,
I told you after I watched it. You thought I was being a hater. I just gave you an unbiased opinion of a comic that was part of my childhood.
Yeah.
So, you know, there's that kind of, you know, that perspective that I'm looking at it through. And then I'm just looking at it as just, you know,
a movie critic.
Not necessarily a movie critic, but someone who likes a good movie with a nice storyline and visuals. And it just fell short on a lot of aspects, in my opinion.
It did, you know. I like the graphics. I like the graphics. I like the whole... without going deep into it, like, they could have done a lot with it. It had a lot of potential to be one of the best DC movies, period, though. That's... It's because the character is so fascinating.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Just...
So I'm going to tell you something that did not disappoint that came out this past week.
What? I want to hear this.
Killer Mike's album, Michael.
Oh, really? It's
that,
good?
Yeah.
I heard yes. Someone told me that it was dope.
Dope is an accurate description of it.
Okay. Yeah, I'm going to check this out. Let me check it out. I don't pirate stuff no more, so, you know. Now I get things legit way. I got Apple Music. I have it.
You know, yeah, I was about to say.
Yeah, I have it. Just... Like, I have it now. You know, back in the day, I was that dude. You know what I'm saying? You know, it's me and you, so we're uncut. You know what I'm saying? I was that nigga back in the day with that shit. I ain't gonna hold it. You know what I'm saying? I'm sorry. That's what I was with the whole music game. And oh yeah, I'll get it. I'll get it, man.
Yeah, it's a dope album, man. Take the time to listen to it, man. Sit with it, listen to it. It's a dope album.
All right, man. All right, let me do these reads real quick, Will T. All right, so you want to do it? You start it off, bro.
Yeah. Ampire Media hosts multiple DMV podcasts, such as the John Kime Report, hosted by ESPN, Washington Commanders Insider John Kime, and Jones Football, hosted by US Today Insider who?
Mike Jones.
That's right.
Hey, subscribe to our podcast on Stitcher, Spotify, iTunes, TuneIn, iHeartRadio, and Google Podcasts. Just search The Urban Sports Scene.
Make sure you subscribe to The Urban Sports Scene YouTube channel as well.
Also, join our Urban Sports Scene Facebook group. Search Urban Sports Scene, sports bloggers, sports podcasters, and sports debates.
Don't forget to tweet us at Urban Sports Scene. Hit us up on IG at Urban Sports Scene and like our Urban Sports Scene Facebook page.
You know, I forgot something. You know, I forgot it. Anyway, also, I'm sorry. This podcast could be found on the Podcast DC app, the local app with hundreds of options in local news and health in the DMV region. Download the Podcast DC app to hear all of the Ampire shows as well as other great content. Other great content. I'm geeking today, man. All right, did I do the podcast, the bloggers, our group, our Facebook group? Did I do that already?
Yep, sure did.
Thank you, sir. Hey, we'll see.
Let's get into our traditional pregame.
Here's what we have on tap. We'll talk about the Wizards trading Bradley Beal to the Phoenix Suns and Kristaps Porzingis being traded to the Celtics. We'll discuss who we think the Wizards – also, we'll discuss who the Wizards should draft Thursday night, which is tomorrow, is the NBA draft. Finally, in our segment HBCU Corner, we have a pre-taped interview with North Carolina Central University's women's basketball coach, Trisha Stafford Odom. All right, let's get right into it, man. Some big things happened on Sunday. The Washington Wizards traded star Bradley Beal, guard Jordan Goodwin, and forward Isaiah Todd to the Phoenix Suns for Chris Paul, Landry Shamet, and future second round picks and multiple pick swaps. Will T, are you in favor? Were you in favor of the deal? You think the Wizards did
a
good
thing? I have a better question.
Oh, well, ask. Go ahead, bro.
On a scale of 1 to 10, how happy were you?
Happy? I think... happy is in the word for me for this one. I don't know. I'm a little in the middle with this one. I think they could have gotten better. They could have done better. But I think just to get Beal off the books. I mean, from 1 to 10, I'll say I was a seven. Mm-hmm. I think a seven. We're from the area, from the DMV. I'm a Lakers fan, but you're gonna always root for the home team. Any which way, you're gonna root for the home team. I think that what this new front office has done is like kind of, you know, they've subtracted an individual that's not going to help them become champions, right? Because the goal in any organization, any sports teams or whatever, is that it's to win a championship. And this that and Bradley Beal, no knock on Bradley Beal, fantastic basketball player, but at the same time, if he's the guy, as your one, and you had to get him allocate all the money to him to be the one, you're not going to gear yourself to be a champion. So for this team, this organization, I think they did themselves a big favor, they put themselves in a better situation to achieve the ultimate goal if they build it correctly.
All right. So I'm going to answer your question. Am I in favor of this deal for the Wizards? I would have to say yes. Mm-hmm. And here's why. We know Bradley Beal, he's just starting the first. I think this is this the first year of the new contract that he signed?
I'm not sure.
I believe so. I could be wrong. I have to double check that and get back to everyone if I messed up. But he's starting the new contract. You're not going to get a lot from a guy that you're paying $50 million, right? Mm-hmm. So you're not going to get multiple lottery picks and pick swaps for him, right? On top of that, to put it kindly, although Bradley Beal has been a three-time All-Star, he was two seasons ago, he was competing with Steph Curry until the last day of the league regular season for the scoring title. He isn't the most accomplished star players, quote unquote star player. He hasn't shown the ability to take a team into the playoffs or even pass to get a team into the playoffs by himself as the lead or to get them into the second round. So when Phoenix provided this package for him, I was a little skeptical at first, but seeing as though this team will get salary cap relief. And this is something that I know you're probably going to laugh, but getting 6 second-round picks is huge. I'm not going to say huge. It's an accomplishment because here's why. I think one of the people that you know that I praised in the past was Sam Hinkie.
Yeah.
Right? For what he did with the process in Philadelphia. Yeah. Being able to strip it all the way down to the studs, have lots of salary cap, and then have multiple second round picks. And then with that salary cap space that he has, he was able to facilitate trades for other teams and get salary, you know, take salary in and collect first round picks. And I think that this is the strategy that this new Wizards front office is targeting.
Yeah, I mean, I just felt like they could have gotten a player like DeAndre Ayton or whatnot. But I'm not knocking them. I mean, I feel like you're not allocating. Now you're not. They're in a situation where they can strip this thing to its bare core. Like it's naked. Like they're already naked now. Basically. So now they can build what they want to build. They're not hindered by anybody's contract. As much as I like a DeAndre Ayton, for instance, I'll use that example. I do like DeAndre Ayton. I think he has a lot of potential and a lot of talent. But you're not pigeonholed by him. You know what I mean? Now you can get somebody younger, a player that you can get multiple players because the draft or players that you build within your own system to kind of like build a champion, build a contender. We see OKC, look how they built their team. They've always used they've been compared to this model because of where Dawkins came from, right? So they've been compared to the model. And you know, obviously it's a little different, right? Because you don't have a trade where you had a Russell Westbrook get traded and you give you a Gilchrist, right? Just Alexander, right?
Shea Gilchrist
Alexander. Exactly. SGA. Let's call him SGA. SGA, right? Yeah. So you don't have that. You couldn't make that type of trade, that type of deal. You don't have a future Hall of Famer to make that type of deal. But still, you have an opportunity if you draft correctly, if you do some of the other things, that you can get yourself in that situation. You know, SGA wasn't the number one pick in the draft. He wasn't the number two pick in the draft. I believe he was a lottery pick, but he was like late in the lottery. So you can make if you draft correctly, you can get a player of that caliber and that elk to a point where you can build your organization, build your team to be a contender without allocating so much money for a guy who ain't that dude. You know what I'm saying? So I think they did the right thing now that I think about it. And also, I mean, we had Karita on the show last week, and she's, you know, it's hard to trade Bradley Beal to who you want to trade him to because he did have the no trade clause.
Yeah, and if I remember correctly, Gilgeous Alexander was the 11th.
Yeah, 11. Yeah, he was a late lottery pick. I can look that up too. He was a late lottery pick. I know that.
But here's also the plus side for the Wizards, right? You get Chris Paul. Mm-hmm. Chris Paul, even though he isn't the Chris Paul that we remember, you know, from 10 years ago, even 5 years ago when he was with the Clippers, or helping to take that Houston Rockets team to the conference finals, mm-hmm. semifinals, conference finals and semifinals. He's still a pro,
yeah.
Right? Chris Paul is a guy who has something that you desire, leadership qualities that if you're building a young team, he could show guys how to come in, prepare, be a pro. Look what he did in OKC for that 1 year he was there.
Definitely.
Right?
Yeah, definitely.
But then on top of that, Chris Paul and Landry Shamet, those are two guys that come the trade deadline, a playoff team would definitely be looking to add.
Mm-hmm.
Landry Shamet, a guy who's phenomenal, who's an above average 3-point shooter, and Chris Paul, his veteran experience and his play as a point guard and and kind of like a second coach on the floor are desirable qualities for a team with championship aspirations or playoff aspirations. So you could possibly trade both of those guys separately and get more additional picks.
Yeah, I think there's a lot you can do, man. Again, if you're the GM in Washington and you're part of that team, that front office, you can do whatever. You have the opportunity to create it into your own vision, right? Like, this is your chance to create it into your own vision. You don't have to build around Bradley Beal. You don't have to build around some of these other people. Kyle Kuzma has, like, used his option. He, you know, declined his option. Now he's a free agent. I mean, he's opted out of the Washington with his deal. So he's a free agent. So there are so many things now that this team is now working off of. Like, they're working off of their own. What they imagine this roster to look like. They're not forced to have any particular player. Speaking of another player who was traded. Well, I do want to add this before we talk about what happened to Porzingis today. Do you feel like the Suns are better with Bradley Beal? You're swapping Chris Paul with a healthy Chris Paul. Are they better without Bradley Beal?
I would say yes. Okay. What you saying? Chris Paul is healthy?
Yeah. If Chris Paul was like, you're basically trading Chris Paul for Bradley Beal, right? Correct. So Chris Paul,
yes.
If Chris Paul and Bradley Beal are both healthy, is this the better trade?
I do think so, and here's why.
Okay.
If you're Phoenix, mm-hmm. Chris Paul, for all he does, he's a guy who's most effective with the ball in his hand.
Mm-hmm.
when you look at Devin Booker, Devin Booker showed you during the playoffs he could be even more effective than Chris Paul from a scoring standpoint and making plays.
Yeah.
But what you can't do, or I'm not going to say you can't do, but what makes it hard when you want to play Booker on ball and Paul off ball is Chris Paul is pretty stagnant. He doesn't move a lot without the ball. Bradley Beal is actually excellent moving off ball, and we also know that his three-point capability. So you open up the floor a little bit more with another shooter, and then that potentially gives if DeAndre Ayton is able to take a step forward offensively, creates more space for DeAndre Ayton in the low block.
All right. I mean, I disagree. The only reason why I disagree, I get what you're saying, but because Booker wasn't winning and he got the hand on the ball before Paul was there. He got the hand on the ball, but he wasn't getting to the playoffs. I had a good bubble appearance, but he was getting to the playoffs. You got Chris Paul in there, and as soon as that happened, as soon as he was injected healthy, you were a finals contender. I don't know, like, the issue with Bradley, like, to me, now you're going to ask, you have three dudes, and you're going to have to ask them all to create, you're going to ask one to create for the others. Everybody has to have a role. The same, it's in basketball. Everybody needs a role. The three with LeBron, Bosh, and Wade, reason why it worked so well is that, like, one dude in even though LeBron had to have the ball in his hand, that's correct. That's what Dwayne Wade, he told, like, LeBron, you have to have the ball in your hand so for it to really work. But LeBron was a decision maker, right? Like, he's always been a decent decision maker. You just have scorers who you're going to ask to make decisions. You know what I mean? Like, and that's a little difficult. You know what I mean? I love Kevin Durant. Like, I love Kevin Durant. But is he like a decision maker or he's a scorer? Like, you put him in a – you had
Kevin Durant's a scorer.
He's a scorer. Booker is a scorer. Bradley Beal is a scorer.
He's a scorer, but who has improved drastically as a playmaker.
Yeah, but he's better off – he's a scorer. Like, he's not a court – there's levels to this point guard thing. You know this. We talk about – that's why we like Chris Paul so much.
No, I understand. Yeah. No, I understand what you're saying. But one of the things that Devin Booker has – become better at is distributing the ball and being a playmaker and facilitator for those on his team.
Yeah.
Now, when you put him in pick and roll with DeAndre Ayton, from my experience, what I see, it's a far more efficient play than when you put Chris Paul in pick and roll with DeAndre Ayton.
I think
that's just what I see.
Okay, so what I see is that I feel like when you put Chris Paul in pick and roll with DeAndre Ayton, there is more options because of his vision. So he may not go to, he can do the pull up if he wants to. But that's his choice, and he can feed DeAndre Ayton in the basket in ways that even is better. It's as improved of a passer as Booker is. He ain't doing it like Paul is, if Paul is doing it. And then Paul can find the shooter on the weak side better than Booker, even off of that, and in stride, though, and catch them dudes in stride. Because, again, he's looking to pass more than Booker is pass and shoot, so his options are a little different. You know what I'm saying? Like, I know what you're saying. You're talking about in terms of it's more of a threat, right? Booker's going to be able to pull the three, or he can pass it, dump it down. You're looking at more of a dual threat. I totally get it. But also on the flip side is that, like, Paul, which makes him more fascinating, makes him the reason why Paul has won everywhere. Forget championships; that he's always improved a ball club. That's why you're saying here, even here in DC, like, you can have him here. He can help. He can build his own stock value to trade him away because he may improve your ball club in a way. He may improve your ball club. But in Phoenix, I feel like there's so much he does for that ball club, even in high screen role. I think he's so much he does. Not just for eight. And I know you're saying, I'm talking about for the other players, like for other players who are spotting up, getting ready to shoot the basketball.
Yeah, I mean, either way you put it, I think there's a higher likelihood that Chris Paul never suits up for this team.
Oh, me either. I don't think so either.
than him actually suiting up. Yeah. If you look at this roster, they pretty much, you know, after Porzingis, when, and we'll talk about this,
yeah,
if or when Kristaps Porzingis is traded, they pretty much, you know, tore this thing down to the studs. And then I also know that Chris Paul's salary isn't fully guaranteed for this year. I think that the team has the option up until the 28th of June, if I'm not mistaken, to potentially release him.
Okay.
And I believe only half of the salary will be on the books. So there's always that.
We'll see. I'm seeing this team trying to get draft picks. So hopefully they can find a deal, or whatever, like to even trade Chris Paul for something, like you said, a second rounder. But I think they can finagle something. There are teams out there who are kind of very interested in Chris Paul. You mentioned Porzingis. It has been reported that Wizards traded for Kristaps Porzingis to the Boston Celtics in a three-team deal involving the Clippers. The Wizards will get Marcus Morris, Amir Coffey, and a 30th pick in the first round, and the Clippers get Malcolm Brogdon from the Celtics. Will T, your thoughts, man?
So I want to be clear, it hasn't.
It's reported.
It's reported that it hasn't gone through.
Yeah, but it's supposed to be. It's darn near gone through. But yeah, go ahead.
Yeah, so it isn't official. So I just want to make sure that
that's why I said reported. That's why I said reported. Like allegedly. Okay. Allegedly.
Yeah. I think it. One, I don't understand why the Celtics would want to take on Kristaps Porzingis.
You don't get it? Trade. I get it, but I'll let you go. Go ahead.
I understand what they're trying to do. Porzingis is more size, more shooting, and that's something that they lacked against Miami, right? For some reason, the coach, Joe Malzahn, has decided not to play Robert Williams. I don't know if it's because Robert Williams isn't healthy or just from a stylistic perspective he's trying to figure out how to best incorporate Robert Williams. I get it, but Kristaps Porzingis, he brings size, he brings shooting, and he also provides something that I noticed that when this team was probably at its best, they had a guy who could play from the high post and could help with the facilitation of the offense, you know, something that Al Horford was really good at.
Yeah.
Maybe that's one of the reasons, you know, you add that additional shooting and size, you open the lane up a little bit for Jaylen Brown and Marcus Smart and Jason Tatum to get downhill a little bit more. Uh-huh. But I still kind of struggle with the fit into that office and what Boston's wants to do.
I forgot about my man Robert Williams. I don't think that they need Porzingis. So let me start it off with that. To your point, I do agree. I don't think they need Porzingis. I see why they got Porzingis. I'm not mad at the matchup because I do think that Robert Williams is underutilized in Boston. I think when he's on the floor, he does so much for their defense that kind of gears helps out with their offense. And even if you utilize him correctly, I do think he could be a double-double easily in the NBA. Like, easily. Easily. Wouldn't be a challenge. But there's a reason why. I think that Boston is lacking, but they didn't. This trade doesn't really take care of it. Like, they need a number. They need a one. They need a legit real one, a good decision-making one. And I'm no knock on Marcus Smart. I think Marcus Smart's a hell of a player, hell of a defensive player. He a dog. But you know what I mean? Like, you need a one. You need, like, a Chris Paul-ish point guard. A guy that can set up, that can calm them down, run the offense, not turn the ball over, can get into their sets, and they're good to go. But in terms of this trade, I see what they're trying to do. Like you said, Will, like, they play in Miami. They like to shoot the three, right? Ever since they lost to Golden State, they've been three happy. That's why they lost the series against Miami. It's more spacing for Brown and Tatum to go ISO, which I don't think is the way to go. But that's why they made this trade. I've been a big fan of Porzingis here in D.C. I think he's shown folks what he's capable with his game. Defensively, he could help this team because he's always been a good shot blocker. You saw that in New York, Will T. We saw that in D.C. He's always been a good shot blocker, so he can still do that for the Celtics in terms of their defense. But I just feel like in terms of the need, I don't think this is the right need for the Celtics to make the move. For the Wizards, this is great, right? You get this guy off the contract. You're getting the 30th pick overall. You can get the 30th pick overall in the draft pick, and in the draft you get you're emptying the space. So again, you can get somebody in this draft, which a lot of players to me are about the same. So you can get somebody at high quality with the 30th pick overall. I think the Wizards they got to steal with this one. I'm still hearing too that the Wizards will probably get some picks from the Celtics once this goes through. They're still working out on a little bit of details in terms of draft picks. That's like the thing that's holding them up. And the word is they'll get more draft picks out of this trade.
So here's the thing about draft picks. They're only as good as the people who are making the picks.
Yeah.
Right. So this new front office isn't going to get the opportunity to really put in their system for evaluating draft picks. So they're going to have to rely a lot on the current staff, scouts, and other guys within that front office.
Winger better wing
and that's why I say, draft picks are only as good as the people who are making the picks.
True.
So, we can be excited that we have a new front office for the Wizards, but, I don't believe within these this week or 2 weeks that they'll have the opportunity to really implement their evaluation process. So, hopefully they're able to hit. Who knows?
Yeah, I don't know they're going to hit. I mean, I think I think they'll have an opportunity to. We'll see. We'll definitely see. But speaking of the draft, the NBA draft goes down tomorrow, and the Wizards have the 8th pick in the draft. Will, in terms of any players that are out there, who would you like the Wizards to draft, or who would you think the Wizards should draft?
I said it last week, Anthony Black out of Arkansas.
Yes, sir, that's who you like?
Anthony Black out of Arkansas. I like his game, and I think he has a tremendous upside.
So this is wild, man. Usually I don't I don't watch college ball that much, but I did my homework for this show. I really did my homework. And I was looking at all the players that people thought the Wizards should get, right? I mean, on these mocks, right? A lot of these mocks, they had the Wizards getting Cam Whitmore out of Villanova, Kobe Bufkin out of Michigan.
He's a local guy.
Who Kobe Buffett?
Cam Whitmore.
Anthony Black is a favorite, right? Taylor Hendricks out of UCF. Asar Thompson, 6'7" guard out of the overtime elite league. Jarace Walker out of Houston, 6'8" freshman. Keyontae George, shooting guard out of Baylor. Jet Howard, Juwan Son out of Michigan. And, so all these dudes I watch, right, and there's, two cats that stood out to me that legitimately can fall to the Wizards that I was like, yeah, I like their game. Anthony Black, I like his game. I think the Wizards would be cool with Anthony Black, too, so it's not a knock on Anthony Black. I think Anthony Black would be great with the Washington Wizards. But to me, it was Taylor Hendricks was the dude who intrigued me the most. He's a 6'9", forward. Who as a freshman averaged 15 points, shot 38% from three, and had 7 rebounds. Is probably rated the best defender in this draft. You know what I mean? Can pick and pop, and can post. And when you can do all that in today's NBA, that is golden. You know what I'm saying? That is golden. And then when I mean shoot the three, he shoots the three well. Has range and good touch, good follow through. Watch this dude. And then I looked at Kobe Bufkin out of Michigan, 6'4" guard, kind of reminds me of a poor man without the speed, right, of a De'Aaron Fox, because he has a good mid-range, plays tough and gritty, plays defense, he scraps for rebounds, scraps for, loose balls, he has a nice lefty stroke. Pause. That ain't sound right. Pause. So I was like,
"You know what you mean?
You know, what I mean." But I thought he was like, I think like he's a good fit. Obviously Anthony Black. I think he's dope. Only thing I would want for him is like to improve his three point shooting a little bit. But I think that's more of the shots he was forced to take playing with Arkansas. I mean Nick Smith from Arkansas. Both of those two had to kind of like do it all for Arkansas. So. Yeah, but for me, I would like for them to take Hendricks, but I don't think the Wizards would take a four. I think they want a guard. They want a point guard, I think.
Yeah, I think they want someone that they believe to be the building block for what they're trying to put together here over the next couple of years.
Do you look at this draft as a deep draft?
Not really. So, well, I'll say this. Deep from, do I think there'll be a number of players who will be contributors and, you know, uh-huh. be able to contribute to a team right off the bat? Not necessarily, but I do think that this is a draft that you could potentially get four or five future all-stars out of.
Like you said, I think if you can do your job right, it's about the people you trusted in those rooms, right? Because mm-hmm. I do think that this team has the capability. Like I think this draft has the capability of having a player that stands out. Like my man on Twitter, my man Cameron says, I've been saying it for the last 2 weeks. Asking Anthony Black, that's the player he wants. Kayla Powell said Kobe, Cam, and Black. Those are the three players that she would want. One of those three in the first round pick. Yeah, man. I just think that there's going to be a player, right? That kind of shocks the world, right?
Yeah.
That because folks are saying this draft isn't as deep. I'm gonna give you another player that I like because I watched him play in the tournament. It was what's his name? Terquavion Smith out of NC State. Did you watch him play in the tournament?
No, I did not.
Okay, bro, I'm gonna tell you this. They got him going in the second round. Like I watched everything, but he dropped about 18 points a game last year, and his freshman year, I think he averaged like I want to say 16 as a freshman. Last year he was a sophomore, but he's a little light. And I feel like they punish you when you like a sophomore though, because I feel like if he was a freshman averaging like 17.9, he would be like on an automatic first round pick. But when he played against who they played. They play Creighton. Dude dropped 32 in the tournament. And, I mean, fast, quick, energetic, got a J, got range, got touch. Like, he fits today's NBA, which kills me that he's like a second round. Like, they have him as a second rounder. So, if the Wizards, hey, Wizards fans, if he's in the second round, y'all should take him. But if y'all want Laker fans who listening to the show, and the Lakers, imagine, talk to Jenny and tell Jenny I said, hey, this is the dude right here, Smith, NC State.
I'm sure Magic is listening.
Magic should be listening to me, Will. He should be listening to me. He definitely should be listening to me.
All right,
so with Bill and Porzingis being traded, Will T, how important is it for this front office to be successful during this draft? I know you're saying, like, it's not going to be their program, but is it still important for them to have that look for the fan base? Like, all right, they were successful in this draft?
I think it's essential that you, especially when you pretty much studied the, you know, you not studied, but you, taken away or you've traded away the key contributors from this roster. I think it's essential that you come away with a guy who can contribute to your team right away. You don't necessarily want, you know, they have the 8th pick and the 30th pick, right? Mm-hmm. With the 30th pick, it'd be cool if you get a guy who's a project that 2 years from now is a starter and is a contributor and is averaging double digits, mm-hmm. right? Mm-hmm. And making an impact on a night-to-night basis. But with the 8th pick, you need to be able to get a guy who pretty much from day one can come in and contribute. He doesn't have to be a 20-point scorer, but he needs to be a guy that's in the rotation and the fan base sees flashes. Mm-hmm. and says this is a guy that will be a part of a championship roster or a team that's contending for the play for contending for the playoffs within 3 to 4 years.
Yeah, I agree. I think that this is like this team needs they need to find that dude. Like they need to find a dude that they can say, "Hey, let's pair him up with Denny and Corey Crisper."
Man, I fully expect Corey Crisper and Denny to be gone.
Me too. I do too. I do. I think so too. I agree. I think they're gonna be gone. I don't think they're gonna be here at all.
I think they'll be here to open up the season.
No, the season, but they're not a long term goal. The long term. They're not part of the long term squad. They're not at all. Not at all.
Yeah, I don't think they're part of the long term plans.
Yeah, not at all.
Unless they show something. I mean, unless you know, first half of the season they come out and they show flashes of being guys that could be key rotational players for when this team turns this thing around.
But no disrespect to them, but I doubt it. I really do. And hey, surprises, man. Shockers, but I doubt it. I really do. But anyway, as part of our HBCU Corner segment, we'll play our interview with North Carolina Central University's women's basketball coach, Tricia Stafford Odom, after the break. You're listening to the Urban Sports Say.
For ages.
Yeah, dig.
Deuces.
On Empire.
Empire Media.
Yeah, go ahead, Wilty. Go ahead. I'll let
Urban
you say
Sports
it.
Scene on Empire Media. That's empiremedia.com.
.com.
Straight out of ATL. Got young one. Chopping that thing, baby. Swiss beats. Full surface. Come on.
Party in the hood, I might just start some shit. Underground, downtown, I might just start some shit. Give me the key to the city, I'ma lock this bitch. They ain't gon' take me alive, and you can bet that. Hit him where the chest at, hit him where the neck at. Show me where the rest at. They in the same building, living like a mess pack. 4 miles from where the deck at. Bet that, shout if you and me gon' ride over to the other side. It's how these motherfuckers die. First make a prank call, get the kids out the house. Ain't tryna get on kids, I'ma turn it like
you are listening to the Urban Sports Scene with Wole and Ray, and we are part of Empire Media and AmpireMedia.com. All right, folks, it's time for HBCU Corner. Right here with us, we have North Carolina Central University's women's basketball coach, Tricia Stafford Odom. What's up, coach, and welcome to HBCU Corner with the Urban Sports Scene.
Wole, what's up? Ray, good to see you. Good to talk to you. Great to be here, you guys.
Like we mentioned prior to this, you know, the recording.
Yeah.
Ray and I said that we met you at the shore, at Eastern Shore, while you were coaching in that game. And I told Ray, I was like, Ray, I like her.
Oh, man, I hope it wasn't the mumblings under my breath that you could hear. But I do remember that encounter. I really, really do. Because believe it or not, I'm focused, I'm engaged. But I also see everything around. I got my head on the swivel. So the comment, I loved it. It was encouraging. Y'all got me hyped a little bit. So I remember you guys. It was a great first impression.
Yeah, thank you, man. I just like that you were into it. Like, as a coach, you're into it for your girls. And yeah. that girl, Burks, I was just impressed with her. Jay, she was like, Steph out there. Oh, yeah, that Jay was something.
Yeah, yeah. I think that day and a couple of other games in the conference, Kamira Burks went nuts. Uh-huh. She has the capability of shooting with tremendous range. She could be conscious-less at some points, which is good and bad. I think you have to not care about the environment when you're going to be the best player there is, because you can't be concerned with what people say, what people think. You just got to go out there and hoop. Great example, Miami Heat right now. They don't care. So they go get it done. And Burks, man, she shoots it. She thinks her range as soon as she steps in. And all I got to do is just calm her down sometimes. Like, give me a little better, a better shot, you know, after the ball comes back to you. Maybe you let that fly.
Hey, but she plays to the last second, though. That's what I love about her. Against Norfolk in the tournament, she ain't give up. She played her hardest all the way until the game was over.
Even when it was in doubt
at the last waning second, she was still chirping too. I was like, that's what's up.
Listen, that's who she is from the inside out. Chicago young lady, been through a lot. She has no fear. Great kid off the court, like, and wants to please, to be honest. I mean, one thing she's focused on this past season was to get better defensively. I mean, she understands, you know, she doesn't want to be a one side of the ball player and being known as just a shooter. And I'm telling her, look, we as a staff are trying to make you a complete player, because nobody has the specialty that you do. I mean, you shoot like crazy. She shoots and talks, no question about it. So now I'm like, back it up on both sides of the ball. Back it up on both sides.
It's called that mama mentality, right?
Yes, absolutely. Absolutely, man. Those things, I don't know if you can teach them. They're kind of somewhere inbred.
You can't teach it. I'm sorry. Yeah. You just can't teach it. Hey, so Coach, Ray and I, we want to do a tour of HBCU. So in terms of Central, what's a go-to spot to eat?
Oh, now you catering to the fat side of me right now.
Just don't do that.
I mean, you see me light up, right? So down the street, I'm sure it's an African-American owned restaurant. It used to be a food truck, and I don't know the history, so I'm learning as we go, but Let's Eat Soul Food. It's now a restaurant.
Okay.
They have different days of specialties. I know Thursday today, that might be, I don't know what it is, but now you're gonna make me hungry and go over there and get something. But I think it's something that I started eating when I've come here. Why am I going nuts? I don't know. I can't remember the special. You got Let's Eat Soul Food. You've got Dame's Chicken and Waffles downtown. Uh-huh. Then there are a chain of restaurants, soul food restaurants. There's Try Fish Soul Food. Uh-huh. I've tried them all, but you know, they have varieties, and I don't think they're gonna get our blood pressure up too high.
All right, let me ask you then.
Not wrong.
Saying that, can you give us a healthy spot? I don't know why he asked you about food when he don't hardly eat. Look,
I eat when I go out of town, though, bro. I eat when I go out of town.
Hey, this fact at the MEAC tournament, he was making almond butter and jelly sandwiches. He ain't even
that's
eat. Look,
that's a fact.
So you got like a smoothie.
Hey, line.
I'm always gonna go with Tropical Smoothie Cafe.
We got that here.
We got that in PG County in Maryland.
We got Jamba Juice. There's Kale's Kitchen. There's a lot of healthy foods. You just have to make your choices. You have to make healthy choices.
What are you talking about? The almond butter? You're going to reference that? You're going to bring that up?
Yeah, the almond butter, peanut butter, and jelly joint.
Exactly.
Calories, right?
Yeah. Hey, listen. I'm trying to tell you, my man, he mixed it up a little bit. It's all good, though. But I want to ask you, again, we did have a prior discussion. We can't share on air all of it. But you got the PWI experience at Cal. So talk about the difference between Cal's homecoming and what you see at Central.
That's how you going to phrase it right now? Come on, Ray. Oh, shoot. Cal, wonderful institution. For years, it was the number one public institution in America. So a proud Golden Bear. But I've never seen a homecoming that comes close. Not in Berkeley, California. No. And like we said, off air, I mean, I'm a West Coast kid all day. You know what I'm saying? But I had to learn about HBCUs on the job because we don't have them out there. There is nothing like the pride of being an Eagle. People are absolutely proud to have been a part of this institution, to have, you know, generation after generation that have been here and the ones here now. I mean, the difference is, I guess, the spirit, if that's one word, it's the spirited environment and the pride that goes along with it. But I mean, it's cracking. I mean, it's their motorhomes, like RVs, got an RV row, you got barbecue pits, you have little taste test all over. So you got a little bit of everything. The elderly, the kids, there's something for everybody. And then our championship team now is putting out the product that's dope. Coach Jerry Mack was here before when I came, had a winning tradition. I think it took a little low, but Trey Oliver right now, national champ. So people want to be here in this environment watching our football team and everything about it.
Hey, I might get in trouble for this, but I'm being real. Well, you already know where I was. I was at the Aggie Eagle Classic last year, and y'all might have the best cheerleaders in the MEAC.
Oh, yeah. I mean, you know, before I started coaching, you know, I was trying out, but that wasn't my niche. So I just went on over to coach. But what I do know, the coach does an outstanding job. She got them on fire. Sometimes in the evenings I come in, you know, some kids may want to come shoot or whatever. And the coaches in here, they're getting it in like full-fledged workouts. Like it is no joke. So they have done an outstanding job. The cheerleaders, the spirit team, and there are a couple of different names of the groups of dancers and stuff, and champagne, like they're getting it in. So I'm proud to say I'm a part of that. They are not boring. They will give you a show in sync, coordination, dressed well, and they're getting it done. They kind of look like me, but you know.
I feel you. So, Coach, you talked about Cal. In four seasons in Cal, you averaged 15 points. In 92, you averaged 23 points a game, so you was hooping for real. Like, you was getting it in. You was getting it in. So, like, and during that time, who was the team you just like getting buckets against?
Wow. I mean, thank you for knowing that, but that's a long time ago, man.
But everybody got a team that, you know, I gave them the business. Like, I gave that person.
I don't want to sound crazy, but it was Pac-10. Yeah. I want to say Pac-9 of them got buckets. that's what I want to say, but you know. But we on air, so I won't say that. But Stanford was the rival. I mean, they kicked everybody's butt. Coach Star Vanderveer will be a Hall of Fame coach, and she's still doing well, still doing her thing. And that was just a championship program, but that was actually Cal Berkeley's rival. I remember one of the biggest games of my collegiate career was when we were able to take them down. We beat them, and that was a big deal. We got Jennifer Azy. They've got so many heralded players that played in that program and that system, Val Whiting. So to beat them, it was a major deal. UCLA was a team that, you know, that's my home squad. So I went to Berkeley, but I was a Southern Cal kid. So that's a UCLA, USC thing. So anytime I went home, had the fans, I had the family, the church members, everybody was there. So I couldn't embarrass. I had to really do work. So I had to make everybody proud, my big brother and everybody. So I would say I would always be up for the Stanford game, Cal against UCLA, Cal against USC. Those were always special.
Oh yeah, I know you're
trying to get the rap being soft out there on the West Coast. You know that, right? So I'm glad you spend something different today.
Stop. You don't believe everything you hear. We are not soft. We are finesse. Slow finesse, you know.
Okay, I mean, yeah, finesse is a good word. You finessing us now with that. Yeah. I know it's a laid back culture though, out there. I get it.
Hey, we chill. But, you know, it never rains in Cali. You know, Biggie want to be out there, all that stuff. You know,
we see the jerseys in the background. So talk about the WNBA experience. I mean, what was that like? You got the Comets jersey, which is no more, and that's probably the most historic team ever.
Yes. I agree.
Wole, who do we interview? Gosh, that played in the WNBA.
She played for coach at Phoenix, though. She was at
Phoenix. She was coaching in Phoenix, assistant coach. Gosh.
Bridget? No.
Who? Assistant coach. Hold up. I got it. I will find it. But anyway, she was just talking about the era of the WNBA was so special back then.
Oh, it was extremely special.
And she was like, it don't compare today to what it was back then.
I agree. And I never want to come off as non-appreciative of what's going on now and what it's evolved to. But there was something special about the initial days. I mean, I originally went to the ABL. That's an American Basketball League. It was held during simultaneous with the regular basketball season while the WNBA was the summer. So I initially started in the ABL. But I'm telling you, the WNBA was cracking. I'm telling you, we start peeling off the ABL and come into the summer months of the WNBA, and it wasn't compared. It's not comparable. The marketing was great. The talent level was amazing. I mean, when you speak of the Houston Comets, you speak of four championships in a row. I will have to admit, because you can all do research, I came year five. Uh-huh. So there's Tina Thompson. There's Cynthia Cooper, Raise the Roof. There was Jeanette Arcane. I mean, Coquise Washington. There were some special people, special names. I was a part of it, made the team, got my minutes, was valuable as a reserve. And the environment, Houston Rockets environment, Houston Comets, they were all intertwined. Uh-huh. It was a great place to be. It was nothing like it. I mean, for that team to have folded, probably disappointed a lot of hearts, because that place is special. And now you got other special places in the league, and it's expanded, but there's nothing like the first. And like I said, there is some watered down talent now, but there's definitely so much talent that could have compared. Like we always talk about, could NBA players in the day play in this now? So some of us think like that as alum. Uh-huh. This kid get buckets when we first started. But I do think, you know, much respect to all of them right now. I think there still needs to be a greater expansion so that more people can have the eloquent memories that we have of them Comet days, man.
It was Chastity Melvin. That's who it was. Chastity Melvin.
Yeah, that's right. That's
Carolina
right.
Girl.
That's right. That's my girl. Went to NC State. So mm-hmm. Yeah, nah, it was nothing like it, man. We were hooping. It was special. We got a lot of attention, like rock stars. Uh-huh. Supporters. And I do think obviously that's where big time fans for women's basketball originated.
Yeah.
I mean, he was going crazy. And you know, I've got a few back there, Houston Comets. I also play with the Miami Soul. Uh-huh. Can't find my jersey, man, but Miami Soul. And so I played in the arena that Jimmy's playing in right now. I mean, back mm-hmm. then Karan Butler was on the team, and I think the coach now was an assistant. So I hold a special place in my heart for the Miami Heat, because Miami Soul, S-O-L, was a team that I was a part of.
And I remember them.
I was a 12-year pro, man, all over the place.
Not all over.
All uh-huh. over overseas and everything. So it's uh-huh. nothing like it. It's nothing like it.
Yeah, it's wild, because I always, you know, we ran out when we talk about the WNBA. I'm like, that time is, to me, the realest time, because not just, like, the talent in the faces, but I felt like they did a better job promoting the individuals back then.
I do too. I think now nobody wants to talk politics, but I think politically now you have an approach that you have to take in marketing. Uh-huh. Back then it's like, who's hooping? That's who we talking about.
Yes. Yeah.
You got Lisa. That's my girl, Lisa Leslie. You had, I think, Rebecca Lobo. I mean, she became a name and a brand. And I mean, Cheryl Swoops. We met it in college, and we, you know, in the WNBA as well. Cheryl was transitioning out when I came in, but like, I mean, the people that they're talking about and that you see on TV, literally putting it down on the court.
Yes.
So there was a parallel. There was a reason. Uh-huh. That was because I played here, so I get this marketing. It was,
yes.
I do this. That's why they're talking about me.
Yeah, I mean, they was on Martin, man. Like, come on now. They was on Martin.
Yeah, I mean, come on. Oh, my knee. Oh, my.
Yeah, come on, man. Like, that already let you know. They were mainstream.
They
let
were
you know
real.
Already.
Dawn. I mean, yeah, it's real stuff.
Yeah.
It was real stuff, so.
All right, so we can get now. Let's get into like the HBCU talk now. This has been enjoyable. We can get to now the nitty gritty.
Oh yeah, for
the
sure.
Real. All right, so last season was arguably your best season at Central. The team was 15 to 16 overall, and fourth mm-hmm. in the MEAC with an 8-6 record. Your team made it to the semis of the MEAC tournament. What did you learn about your team last season?
I learned that they were extremely coachable. And I'm speaking in past tense, because the team we had last year won't be the same team, you know, same makeup. So that was the first and last time I will have coached that particular team. But we were tough, man. And I think that was always a challenge for me, because it's a frustrating part of me when somebody's soft. So, you know, in many different ways, in various ways, especially because y'all think people from Cali soft anyway. I got to have to come at them. So, I mean, just be tough. Don't be no punks, man. Like, go out there and compete regularly and make that mentality, the mentality you take over the game, that should be the mindset of practice and everything. Without any hard feelings, compete. Like, have a desire to win and not lose. So, I think when I challenged my team early on, we were just awful with rebounding. We were just terrible. And I challenged us in a major way. Coaches helped me with that. And then we became one of the top rebounding teams for a stretch. We fell off a couple of times, but it was just a mindset. It wasn't the inability to do anything. It was the lack of a focus. So I think we became focused. They showed me they knew how to be focused. They showed me they know how to play together. And the heart and soul of my team, they hated losing. So it became personal in many ways.
Yeah, you can see it, though. You can definitely see it on the court. Yeah, you see the passion. That's one thing I saw. Like, there was passion on that team. Like, they gritty. Your team is very gritty. It was very gritty.
And I don't want to lose that mindset. Even with new personnel coming in, some going out, I want to stay gritty. I want to stay hungry. And then I want to respect each other's game. And you earn respect by your teammate, by how much that teammate sees you in the gym working on your stuff. I want that to become the norm and a natural thing for us.
I know, like, as a coach,
All right. So, like, the goal is always, you know, the goal of anybody building a program is to improve. Last season was an improvement. So what will it take for your team to take the next step next season to be a team that contends for the MEAC title or to capture the MEAC title?
I'm smiling because off air we talked about change of officiating and all that, but I'm not gonna insert that right now.
I'm glad you didn't.
I'm gonna leave that.
Yeah, we got some trouble before, so we
did. We did. That's why I got trouble. I got trouble. We had some question about it.
Oh my God. Well, let me focus. What's it going to take? Tell me that question again.
What is it going to take next season to contend for the MEAC title?
So I will say this, preseason rankings come out all the time. Sometimes I follow it, sometimes I care, most times I don't. But I remember that we were predicted after having a decent season the year before. It was decent in the tournament, not necessarily the regular season, but I think we were predicted seventh. That's offensive to me. That was offensive. I don't think I really lost anybody. I don't remember, but you predicted me seventh. That was motivation. And I think we were a game out of third. So those were things we remembered throughout the year as a staff. And that helped motivate us on a day-to-day basis. But I do think we always have to emphasize rebounding, like being a domineering rebounding team. I can't state that enough. And then not turning the ball over. I mean, we turn the ball over at a crazy clip, which drove me nuts. Then we got better. And then last game of the season, I recall, I mean, we had way too many turnovers. We didn't convert in transition. So being in shape, I'll say it this way, coming in, got to be in shape to do everything that we want to do. We play TSO basketball, transition, stops, and offense. You got to be able to get up and down. You got to be able to get stops, get the ball back. And then everybody should have a bag, a repertoire, the ability to get me buckets. Like, if you can't do that, you're a hindrance to the program. So you got to be able to do that so we can incorporate TSO basketball. So you got to be in shape. You've got to work on your individual skill sets, which we hold them accountable for those. But we want the mindsets that you come in and going to do it on your own. And then you have to be an unselfish player. So I'm bringing in players to answer your question. I'm bringing in players that will add to what we did do. And that will give us some aspects of the game that we didn't do well. So some scrappiness, another outside shooter. And I'm losing a big piece in Kyra Lowry, who was our point guard who had come from Auburn. That's speed and some wisdom. So I'm bringing in higher IQ players that can put these pieces together and we can roll.
So I'm going to ask the boring question now, but it's important, though. I know you say you educating yourself kind of on HBCU since you started at Central. How does the history of the school factor in the history of hoops there? Like, it's probably or arguably the most legendary hoop school in HBCUs. I mean, you think about Coach McClendon and just the history and where we started from. So
right.
Does that factor into just your message in recruiting or to your players throughout the season at all?
I probably shouldn't use it more in recruiting. I mean, because okay. It's major, it's huge. Like I said, I'm going to commit to doing that in the recruiting process so people are aware from the beginning, the history of the game mm-hmm. and this university. But once you're a part of the team, yes, I definitely, because John McLennan has a picture, a mural on the wall. And it's crazy because, again, I didn't know till I got here the history and the first African-American NBA, all those things. And we did, with the urging of Coach Moten, actually the men's coach, they honored his family and everything this year with a statue and everything. So a lot of our girls started asking questions. So this mm-hmm. year, in particular, I realized the importance of us not having a team full of people that doesn't know where they're playing for and who they're playing for and what this team has been, this university has been through. But when I was hired, I had to do my research and understand that they hired me to elevate the women's program, as has the men's program been elevated with Coach Moten. I mean, championship pedigree. So I can't be next door and be the loser on the block. So I'm trying to take us up to levels that make everyone proud. I mean, we've got a couple of retired jerseys of women that have played in the past prior to the D1 era. So when people come here, they want to be the first on the wall for women's basketball for the D1 era. So we've got the past few years here. I've had pretty much the rookies of the MEAC rookies of the year. Uh-huh. And I don't have them any longer on my rosters just by the portal and people getting poached and picked off. I mean, it's crazy. Uh-huh. But when they come in, they're looking to be the first of something in this program. And we've accomplished many first goals since I've been here. All conference rookies of the year. So we're doing those check by check by check. And I want somebody that's going to stick it through the whole time. And when we build that base and have those bodies, we'll add to the history of North Carolina Central.
You know who Harold Hunter is? My bad. Well,
Harold Hunter. No.
All right. Research that name.
Oh, man. I'm writing notes. I got you. Okay.
Yeah, man, he went to Central. He played here in Washington. That's where we are. And yeah, 5'9" point guard, light skin.
Why you gotta mention light skin?
Oh, so he light skin, bro.
So you see how
he advocating. He advocating.
Nah, but nah, for real. Like he's part of. I mean, you look at the Willis Reeves of the world, like the legendary HBCU player. Yeah. He's right up there. Coach
Harold Hunter. Okay.
He went to Central.
Wow. I should know that then. Okay. I'm gonna look him up.
So coach, you mentioned like the D1 player, you know, new players have their jerseys retired in the Raptors and whatnot. But in terms of your returning players, like what's gonna take them to take it to the next level? And who are some of these returning players that we should keep an eye on?
Morgan Callahan has been in my program for a few years and she had an injury, so COVID year, all that. She'll have a few more years left. She's working on an incredible degree, like something super smart. Psychological science, something. I don't know. But she was honored after the season for all MEAC tournament, all tournament team. Uh-huh. She did really well. She's capable of being a double-double on regular night throughout the season. And once Morgan figures that out herself and do it consistently, it's about her confidence factor. It wavers sometimes. Uh-huh. And I try to do the best I can at teaching young ladies. It's not about the game you play that day. Those will vary, but it's how you approach the game and how you bounce back from the mistake you make on the court. It's cool. It doesn't change who you are. I struggled for a second, but I can pick it back up. So once Morgan has a consistent level of confidence, she's going to be a player that silently, very humble, silently gets it done in a major way and is huge for this program. Tippy Roberson, another Chicago kid, one of those Harold Hunter size, feisty, tough kids that she has come from Stetson, but like I said, with Mira Burks, Chicago kid with toughness. She will run this team this year from the point guard spot. She's extra motivated knowing that there was an ACC point guard that left from Raleigh that's now going to be playing in Norfolk State. So trust me, she's working extra hard to understand that those matchups are going to be epic. But Tippi Robertson will be very special going out with her senior year. And I say that by statistics and by her on-court leadership. She'll get in anybody's face. She's the heart of this team. She's energetic and she's tough. She can get to the bucket. She has got to get out the mentality that all she used to be able to do is just pass, pass, pass. But she can score at will and she can set players up. Golly, I've got several players coming in. Mira Burks is coming back. Oh, yeah. Better than ever. Because honestly, in the tournament, she did well and fought hard. But she was outplayed by, we've talked about a couple of players in the league. And I told her, and we had these conversations. How our young lady did work. Got her name.
Destiny
balled out. And yeah. So I was able to use her as a teaching point. And I'm much respect. But I'm like, Mira, if this was what you're trying to do, you have to do this on a consistent and regular level. So she will come back ready. She had off-season thumb surgery. She's healed from that. And she's going to definitely expand her ball handling and the ability to not just catch and shoot, but put on the floor and mix it up. So I'm excited about her too. But I've got some incoming packages. I had to beef it up a little bit. So I've got size and speed coming out of the high school level. Jada Creech. I've got a few more pieces coming. I can't give it all.
Okay, I was about to ask you. Let us know about these. Let us know about these new recruits. That was my next question. Yeah, but if you want to hold that in, I get it.
You know, we all do that at the beginning of our MEAC to all.
I know.
They all downplay it.
Yeah, they do that. It's so typical.
It's so typical. I'm trying not to be like that.
It's all good. I get it. But I do think that like
I will say this, not to cut you off. The transfer portal, the JUCO route. In addition to me, I'm trying to stay committed to bringing in high school talent and developing them instead of always going to get the ready-made piece, blending that in with the returners and everything like that. So I am bringing in a few high school players, the JUCO route, and a couple of transfers. I got a transfer coming from Sam Houston State. Cool. So she's got some experience for me on the ball and off the ball. So those pieces will definitely change our look a little bit, but make us better.
I was gonna say this. Like, I don't know how a player can lack confidence knowing if you're the coach. What I mean by that is that you instill.
That's a compliment. No, but what does that mean?
No, I'm saying when I watched you coach, right? And it's like all you do is give them confidence. You know what I'm saying? Like a lot of coaches, they get on somebody and they kind of take it away without knowing they're taking it away.
Right,
but you're like, hey, keep shooting it. Like they can't guard like you. Like in terms of when you're talking to somebody, you're like, they can't guard you. Keep shooting it. Like
right.
I don't know.
You were able to hear that.
Yeah, I don't know. Like for when, because I coach kids. Like little, I coach kids, and that's the thing I always try to tell them. Like keep shooting. Mm-hmm. Like I'm not right. You keep shooting because like you're instilling confidence in them. So when you say somebody loses confidence who's a hooper, I'm like, I don't see why you're the coach. I don't see how they can do that.
Wow, that's a major compliment for me. And I would agree. I mean, I've said this before, like I would love to have played for a me.
I see that
makes sense.
Yeah, it makes sense.
And I'm not trying to pat myself.
No, I know, I get it.
That
is
just having played the game, having coached for many coaches, different environments, different places and all that stuff. I feel like I know what's effective. I'm a fan of the game, so I'm going to be the biggest cheerleader, but I'm going to be able to get on your butt. But you should be able to take it because you know I got your back.
Uh-huh.
Like, and I'm not going to gas you up. If you're stinking it up, until you're stinking it up, work on something different that day. we're going to do it together. So thank you for saying that. And I tend to agree with you. I think in my coaching, that is one of the biggest things that confuses me. How could you not have confidence when I'm not tearing you down. I'm not doing that. I don't do that. I wasn't raised like that. So only you're stopping you. If you're being stopped, it's you and what's going on in your head. Because Coach Tris is trying to be the fan. You know, so all I could say to that is we work on things consistently so that repetition helps them build confidence. And I don't know what happens when one shot doesn't go and I revert back because I'm going to shoot that thing till that mug go in. That's how I'm gonna get my confidence.
That's what I'm saying.
I love the coaching style, and you balance out the basketball department because Coach Bolton, he kind of crazy. He
that's so true.
Now you turn around, you saying something lighthearted. He turned and say, "Man, these young boys crazy, man."
That sound like these young kids
crazy. I think it's a good balance. Your style is perfect.
Thank you. Here it is. My style might be great, but he winning. So I want to win. So if I got to flip it a little bit and be Moton-ish on him, I'm about to.
like I said earlier, your program is improving, though. You know what I mean? Yeah. Like, you're doing what – when you build a program, that's what your goal is, to improve, and you're doing that. You know what I mean? So I feel like you're almost there, like, to be honest with you.
Thank you, man. But, you know, I'm a little impatient because I wouldn't be who I am if I'm settling for a 10-year plan. I'm trying to get it done. Like, I do say that we've been on a steady incline. So statistically, individually, as a team, all of that, fan-wise, all that has grown. But again, I think one of the reasons why I was hired by a former AD athletic director, Dr. Wicker McCree, is because she saw in me what I'm capable of doing. So she brought me here to do it. I want to do it now. Like, my first year, our mindset and our motto was now. Like, what are we waiting for? There's nothing to wait. What's crazy is, Deion Sanders tried to say that the other day with his program. I was like, man, I said that at Central 7 years ago.
He's a thief.
He's a thief. Stop thief.
He's not a thief.
Man, and now it's all big. Like, I'm like, y'all said that in Durham, North Carolina. but we're doing it. So kudos for you for knowing and seeing the baby steps and the progress. And I get a lot of support from lifelong fans that have seen us turn this program around. But in all honesty, I don't want any complacency. I don't want anybody saying, oh, this is the best year you ever had, you good, and we sitting back. No, because I'm still looking at four games that I'm mad about we should have won. We should have had 19 wins. So COVID, I mentioned COVID. We were right there. That was my year two or year three. About to win a turnaround. I promise you, we're about to win that thing because we had knocked off teams we weren't supposed to, A&T three times, and we were right there. Then we took a setback. I mean, unfortunately, the university took a hit, athletic department, just COVID in general, so kind of slow rolled us back to where we are now. But I expected us to be where we are a few years ago, to be honest with you. So I'm impatient right now, which I shouldn't be, but that's a personal thing.
You're raising the whole profile of the conference too. That's what I love as well. The MEAC is growing stronger and stronger.
Oh, thank you, guys.
I'm here for it. Real talk. Like, it's multiple teams, including your team, definitely.
Ah, nice. I know you're rooting for the Shore, but
I'm just saying.
Fred Basher's my guy though, so I root for him too when we're not playing him.
Look, one thing right now would be like meeting all the coaches, like most of the coaches, right? That we've enjoyed all of. I think all of you all are just great people, to be honest with you, from what we've done. So
now we got love for everybody. And again, we went to UMES and this is a long time ago. I mean, we was there. I was there in the '90s. I mean, we both were. So
you guys have seen it grow.
Yeah, exactly.
You got that hometown proud.
There you go. I mean, see, Central wasn't in the MEAC when we were there. So, I mean, the MEAC at the time was like Howard and Coppin, and that was it. I'm just being real.
Morgan State, too, right? Oh, yeah, you're right. Yeah, basically, it was those two. Yeah, when we was there, basically.
I mean, if you beat Howard, it was homecoming celebrations.
So
now to see kind of just the programs growing, I mean, it's so dope, man, for real. Like, this is just coming from somebody who's been watching for a long time.
Oh, man, thank you.
It's genuine. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
I love it. I feel it. We we can honestly and pridefully say that we beat everybody in the conference this year, at least split with them, swept a couple, except for, I think we did not beat Morgan State. Which just bothers me. But so we got in-house goals and we've got realistic ones. I think we'll end this season with some realistic expectations that I expect us to fulfill.
My bad, Wole, real quick, I want to ask you one more thing.
Yeah, sure.
knowing your background and the connections you have, does that make scheduling easier for you outside of conference?
Oh, good
that's
point.
That's a great
good,
question. Yeah,
that's a good question. It's a real good question.
That's a very good question. I think it makes it easier just because I can pick the phone up and call somebody or have my coaches, you know, call my person, call my guy or my girl. But as the program gets better and people kind of don't want to play us, they shoot me to the voicemail a little bit, man. Like, wait,
hey,
what?
Listen, see, that's what I'm talking about.
That ain't cool.
That's so messed up.
When I first got here, I had first year, Oregon State, they went to the Final Four that year. I mean, we could have had anybody we wanted here, and they came here. Now they're not even really answering me like that.
So, I'm telling you, Ole, it's real. I seen a coach. I ain't going to say who, but this person showed me a text message like, I'm keeping this coach on ice because I ain't trying to play them. I ain't trying to get upset by no squad that, you know, I'm like, dang.
And that's something Lavelle Moton told me, like, in the beginning when he came. You know, he's been my guy, really. He's been my guy. He's been helpful, just educating me with how things work, how things go, mindsets, helping me to not be frustrated about some things and be proud of my little successes. But that's one thing, like, I came here wanting everybody to understand to get a Power 5 team, Final Four bound, Sweet 16 bound team to come to our HBCU. That's huge. Like, I can do that with a phone call and we get to compete and I get to expose my young ladies to something different. But he also said, like, he had in his early years, he was playing teams that, you know, low key, he would get the win again. And they're not calling him anymore because it's a lose-lose for them. It's a lose-lose. If they beat us to death, they're supposed to.
Yes.
If they don't beat us to death, they're trash.
Yeah, so, true.
So they don't have any motivation, really. So I do appreciate the teams that, you know, allow us to compete. And, you know, there are guaranteed games for people that don't know. You know, some people are committed to, you know, the Power Fives playing us to be able to give us some money for our department, compete, give us exposure. And they're doing it with good reason. And we appreciate those. But some are not trying to hear.
The politics, I tell you, is something else.
I tell you, man. Mm-hmm.
I tell you. So, Coach, I'll wrap it up with this. What does coaching at an HBCU mean to you?
It means that someone believed that Trisha Stafford Odom was a person capable of guiding young lives in their formative years. And they entrusted me with being in an environment where people can look up to me, not as just a coach, but as a Black woman, married woman with children, and see how I juggle lives, my personal life, my professional life. And they can be inspired to know that, yo, she was a hooper. She's a wife. She got kids. She goes to their games. She's a real person. I could see her walking around. I could get to her, can knock on her door. I don't have to go through a million people to get to her, but I'm real. And I think hopefully and prayerfully, I've been some form of inspiration to some people, not just young ladies, but men too, to say, yo, she kind of nice. Cause Trisha's all right. So I'm proud as well. I missed the first several years of my life being at a PWI, which I don't regret, but I understand why people have committed to furthering their education and to being in the midst of an environment of an HBCU because there's nothing like it.
Well, Coach, you're a fan here now. Like, you're a fan. I was already a fan like that day, but now it's I ain't gonna lie. It's been up now. I ain't gonna hold you. It's been up now. So it's a whole different level.
Thank you, man.
I ain't gonna lie.
I appreciate it so much. Thank you so much. Y'all gonna be back at the games this year? Where you gonna be?
We're gonna be at the shore. Definitely.
Y'all gotta be like right by me now. Y'all gotta be like. I need that in my life.
You know what? We make the rounds everywhere. You know,
we do. We will. We'll make the rounds.
And I have to compliment you guys because obviously prior to doing the show and a couple of days ago, I went on and I watched a couple of the podcasts and I'm like, they are fire, energetic. I love it. Like, I don't want to be here like this.
Oh no, we ain't about that life.
Nah, man, we have fun doing this, but yeah, you know, we got to make the rounds. That's the hard part. I mean,
yeah,
we don't even live close to UMES. Honestly, that's a drive.
It's a drive.
Really? The closest HBC to us is, well, technically D1 is Howard. So that's where I cover a lot of games. So I'll see you there probably.
That's fair. I understand that. As long as you sit closer to my side, then you do ties, Coach Ty. we pinky swear on that, then we good. I got your bus right here. This is cool.
You want to? I love it. Well, Coach, is there anything you would like to add before we let you go?
No, I just, like I said, don't forget that when you guys are doing this and you're pumping us up, that I respect what you guys are doing. It's fun. It's exciting. It's exposure. And like I said, you have done your job. You're not just a couple of guys on here chopping it up, having fun and laughing, but you've done your job. So I respect it. I just thank you guys for inviting me and having me.
Thank you. And thank you for being on HBCU Corner with Urban Sports. And we appreciate it.
Much love. Eagle pride.
I love it. I love it.